This podcast is supported by Squarespace, the easiest way to create a beautiful, responsive website. For a free 14-day trial, visit squarespace.com. Hey, it's Lee. Quickly before we get started, we just wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who's listened to the new show during the past month and sent us all the lovely emails and tweets and left comments on the episodes. We get so excited when we get feedback from our listeners, and we can't thank you enough for tuning in each week. If you have any ideas or thoughts or suggestions for the show going forward, please do email us at guardianships@gmail.com. Cool. Thank you so much. Enjoy the show.
They're very simplified forms of political communication. And popular communication has always been simple.
The great thing about popular culture, you know, through memes and other things, is that it makes politics more interesting, more accessible, more entertaining.
Wait, do I need to describe the picture, or am I just reading it out?
Okay. Oh, I know this one. I can see it. Oh, I love this one so much. So this is great. This is Shadow Cabinet Resignation Bingo. And it's so good. It's basically a, I don't know what you call these, but it's like all the pictures of the people in the shadow cabinet with who has resigned. So people get resigning. So someone made like this amazing bingo card, and then there's a line where it's like, oh, I've got a line or whatever it's called in bingo. Oh God, it's so good.
Hey, it's Chips with Everything. I'm Lee Alexander, and this episode has been a long time coming, and I'm just so excited that it's finally here. This week's show is dedicated to one of everyone's favorite aspects of the internet, at least it should be. Otherwise, we need to have a talk. Today's episode is about memes. You know, the little macro picture-y viral frog on a unicycle type things that are littered in virtually every corner of the internet? Yeah, those. If you're active on Twitter or Reddit or any other social network at all for that matter, you've probably seen one of the memes that our social editor, Elena Cressy.
I work at The Guardian and I talk a lot about memes.
Described off the top in the intro.
So I spend a lot of time being exposed to these memes and to all the funny stuff that people are saying on the internet. We need like a better understanding of politics. And let's face it, it's so boring. But when you have these kind of things like memes, you have a way for people to get into it that isn't snooty. You don't need a PPE degree to understand some of them.
The past month has just been super hectic in the worlds of social happenings and politics, with the EU referendum and the American presidential election and Wimbledon and Nigel Farage and the Euros. The list just goes on. And more than ever, we find ourselves just scrolling aimlessly through Facebook and Twitter, trying to make sense of it all. And all of these memetic images and signifiers just start kind of appearing in our feeds, offering us context to the happenings in the world around us in these tiny little short bursts of political commentary. And as Elena has shared with us in the past, creating and finding and analyzing memes has actually become a pretty large part of her job.
I think it's journalism in a different way to what we used to. Like, it's quite weird when I'm in a position and I'm like, oh yeah, so there's this meme, and people are like, I don't understand. And sometimes it's quite hard to explain to someone who is not of the internet. But imagine going to an editor and saying, so people are sharing a picture of a frog on a unicycle and calling it Dat Boy and saying, oh shit, what up? Imagine trying to explain that to someone and then being like, what? And then imagine being like, oh, this is hilarious because there's this meme of Kermit the Frog sipping tea, but Good Morning America, so it was called a tea lizard. Like, how do you even begin to explain that to someone who doesn't spend all their time on Twitter?
So how do you explain memes and meme culture to someone who isn't exactly in the loop? We talked to someone whose career is built on the notion that memes are here to stay, and the idea that they are particularly important where they intersect with politics and social media. His name?
Joel Penny. I'm an assistant professor at Montclair State University's School of Communication and Media. I teach classes about social media, globalization and media, all kinds of things, really. But my focus has mostly been on political expression and digital technologies. Typically, memes are defined in terms of ideas that get spread throughout a culture very broadly. This comes from Richard Dawkins, who was the first person to coin this, and he was talking about it as the kind of cultural equivalent of genes and how they replicate and spread in on the planet.
Memetics, the word was coined by analogy with genetics, has become a big subject on the internet. It's a slightly weird world that you get into.
So just like how genes operate in evolution, you know, survival of the fittest and all of that, memes operate the same way. It starts out as an idea, and then it goes through the process of replication and variation. Just as a human gene becomes adapted to the world around it as it's mutated and variated, the same process holds true for a meme. As memes are shared and altered and parodied and blended, they become more and more representative of the conditions around them, and they begin to hold more authority as time goes on. Now, in terms of what actually makes up or constitutes a meme, there's this guy. He's called
Patrick Davison. He came up with three components of internet memes, and they were the manifestation, the behavior, and the ideal. All of those are guided by a certain kind of ideal or an idea that kind of carries through all the different manifestations. So typically, you know, it's funny because meme has also kind of started to be used just to describe this very specific thing, which is actually called the image macro. The image macro is, you know, the single image with those sort of two lines of white, boldface, impact font type. Typically things like the advice animals that came out of Reddit culture, and they're very easy to, you know, replicate and also create variations of.
Now, memes aren't limited to what Joel just described, though, you know, those images with the big white text over the top, typically with the ironic or sarcastic undertone. He says that imitation-based video campaigns on YouTube, like, for example, the Cinnamon Challenge or the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, where ordinary people film themselves having buckets of ice dumped on them to raise money for Lou Gehrig's disease, because masses of people participated in these campaigns by recording their own versions, they're memes too. Same goes for changing your Facebook profile photo to make a political statement. Virtually anything that is generated that is shareable and conveys an idea worthy of being spread, that, by today's standards, is considered to be a meme. So now back to where politics and society and culture are worked into the mix. The reason serious issues like Brexit and gay rights and other things like that lend so well to meme culture.
They're funny, first of all, and that's a big part of it. You know, political satire and comedy is something that's, you know, it's been popular for a long time and it's getting more so, and becomes a way for people to joke about politics, to make fun of it often. But also, I think a lot of what's been going on are people, you know, trying to use these forms for political expression, to express their views, their opinions, and often in ways that they may see as, you know, spreading an idea that's influential, that's even persuasive.
In a really interesting 21st century way, creating and sharing memes has become a modern form of citizen journalism. It's a means of communicating our ideas, it's a way to spread information.
I think that we need to approach internet memes as a form of raising awareness, as a means through which people reflect about a number of issues, a number of dilemmas they face in their everyday life and in politics and in the economy.
That's Paolo Gibaudo.
I'm a lecturer in digital culture and the director of the Center for Digital Culture at King's College London.
And Paolo's work focuses on social movements and social media and the nexus between the two. He's covered 2011's Arab Spring and Occupy Wall Street and has analyzed how social media and digital culture have impacted and in a lot of ways shaped those movements.
There is an awareness and becoming reflecting on various issues. Because if people have no awareness of an issue, have no consciousness that something is an issue, is a problem, then they cannot act on that, right? And this is what many internet memes indeed do. They often do that with irreverence, with ridicule. We saw so many internet memes, for example, on Donald Trump and his claim that he wanted to close down the internet, or his various claim on migration. So what they allow to do is ordinary people, people with often very low technical skills, IT skills, to engage in this process of self-reflection and self-expression, which constitutes a fundamental element of digital politics.
And while Joel points to the smiley face emoticon as one of the first, if not the first, memes, you know, colon right bracket, became popular in the 80s, Paolo actually refers back to the early 1900s. That's when the beginning of meme culture, not quite internet memes, of course, but meme culture, began to take shape.
If we think about the famous political posters of the 20th century, the most iconic ones being the communist posters, socialist posters, or fascist posters, we see in a way things that are common to me, to internet memes. A very simplified imagery, an iconography, a very condensed expression with slogans and payoffs. And there is something that is still important, obviously, in the present era, because obviously political communication, especially when it comes to electoral campaigns, needs to appeal to a public that doesn't necessarily have a university education and needs to condense very complex contents, political contents, in more simple messages. But it does so often in very clever ways.
So you have extremely complex political and social messaging just tucked into these simple, easily digestible macros that are easy for the average person to understand. It's pretty incredible that the essence of meme culture can be linked back to Stalin and Hitler and Lenin. And fast forward 75, 100 years, and memes, in their more modern internet-y form, have become this ingrained way whereby politicians are drawing voters into the political process. And equally, if not more importantly, we the voters are utilizing memes to react to and engage with politics and public policy. More on that in a moment. We'll be right back.
From sea to shining sea, yes, we can. Thank you, New Hampshire.
Squarespace. This Guardian podcast is supported by Squarespace. Whether the story behind your passion is out of the ordinary or simply out of this world, you should tell it in an unforgettable way. Squarespace helps you do just that, with the only websites designed to showcase what makes your passion worth pursuing. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/guardian.
Hi, if you're enjoying the podcast you're listening to right now, can I recommend another brilliant podcast from The Guardian? It's called The Guardian's Books Podcast, and as the name suggests, it's interviews with authors, book readings, critiques and discussions, as well as full recordings of The Guardian's monthly book club. It's presented by Claire Armistead, and you can get it right now at theguardian.com, iTunes, or your podcasting app of choice.
Welcome back. I'm Lee Alexander, and again, here's Joel Penny.
So politicians and campaigns and parties, they're doing everything they can to tap into this energy and this sort of promotional momentum around these memes and this kind of digital culture. And so you see all kinds of attempts. I started doing this research, and I became interested in this topic around the time when Barack Obama was first running for president. You know, Obama was, you know, really the story of this kind of cultural zeitgeist, particularly from young people. So there were all kinds of, you know, for instance, you know, the meme of the famous Shepherd Fairey image.
That's the red and blue hope image, by far the most famous bit of artwork from Obama's 2008 presidential campaign.
People had, you know, changed their profile picture to that. They were going around, you know, wearing T-shirts with that image. And, of course, there were a million variations of that meme. That could be one of the first maybe really impactful presidential memes, at least in the U.S.
Now, the really interesting thing, Joel says, is that the most successful and impactful imagery and representations of political campaigns of the past 10 years, most notably in Obama's case, are
not coming from the traditional apparatus of what we call political marketing. It is actually an amateur-led, grassroots, peer-to-peer kind of phenomenon. Shepherd Fairey famously did that poster on his own. That was his own contribution. He had no involvement with the campaign. And arguably, that image and the way it spread throughout the culture was far more useful to the Obama campaign than its own logo, which was the fairly famous bow circle with a flag in it.
To me personally, the most impressive example of memetic politics was Bernie Sanders' dank meme stash. I mean, the famous Facebook group where members were sharing and discussing internet memes related to United States Senator Bernie Sanders. There was an amazing example of how you can use memes as a way to approach publics that wouldn't be politicized and that would be difficult to engage otherwise with politics, especially millennials or people who might be a bit distrustful of a candidate. And that basically chimes very well with contemporary digital culture, with its love for irreverence, with love for personal connection, with its distrust of old ideologies and abstract ideas. And that was what makes political memes very effective as a form of political propaganda.
But in spite of all the great ways that memes have benefited our culture and our political discourse, and we have only talked about the good things so far, they can also be a dangerous tool.
I mean, I think that memes are weapons that can be used for good purposes and bad purposes, right, as many other forms of political communications. I mean, so far I've given quite a kind of positive and sympathetic account of memes. But actually, for example, if you look at some of the memes used in the Donald Trump's campaign, they're quite scary. I mean, most famously in recent days, there was this meme with a six-pointed star, an image of Hillary Clinton and a great pile of cash that actually was discovered, originated from a neo-Nazi forum. So it's quite scary also how memes can be used to support conspiracy theory or worse, extreme right-wing political propaganda.
And this is an ultimate 21st century catch-22. Memes have brought millions and millions of people into the political process, and they give otherwise silenced groups of people the opportunity to share their opinion. But because of the democratic nature of the internet, as Paolo says, memes can be used to an entirely different effect.
Because of the persuasiveness of the visual medium, they're used to support falsity, they're used to support false information on various people. I mean, we saw many times how, for example, people construe very questionable theories about certain people, certain political characters. They package it in a meme, then they distribute it, and many people come to accept it as truth, which is often not. And we have also seen how sometimes can be used to channel very worrying stereotypes, xenophobic stereotypes or homophobic stereotypes, in simplified visual form with very dangerous effects.
You know, when monumental things happen in the world and people respond by changing their social media profile pictures in solidarity with the cause? Sometimes it's a response to a natural disaster or a terrorist attack, and other times it's a celebration of human achievement or the overcoming of oppression. It turns out that by changing your profile photo, you're actively participating in meme culture. And there's actually quite a bit of psychological and sociological theory that goes with that phenomenon, something that both Paolo and Joel have studied extensively.
I mean, what I've studied is the way in which various memes have been adopted as personal profile pictures in a number of campaigns, ranging from the Arab Spring to Occupy Wall Street and many others. And this is quite an interesting phenomenon because profile pictures are one of the most unique and individual form of expression online. They are an identifier of who we are, and we know that people put very much much care in the profile picture they use because they feel that it is exactly a way in which they represent themselves. But in these campaigns, often what happens is that people switch temporarily to a collective profile picture or a protest avatar that I describe as a mimetic signifier.
A mimetic signifier in this case might take the form of someone adding a Guy Fawkes mask to their profile photo, or they might add a protest banner to their picture.
And that is quite interesting because in a way is the visual representation of various individuals becoming a crowd, temporarily suspending their individuality, their own personal profile picture, and adopting a mask, the meme as a mask. To show that they support various campaigns and show that to their close friends, but also more generally to the social networks they are engaging with online.
There's a lot of different points of view about what this is, what the value is politically of changing your profile picture. It's very interesting to read the statement of, it was actually the marketing director of the HRC, this group who launched this campaign. Her name is Anastasia Koo. And she came out with several articles afterwards, you know, after the success of this campaign, kind of describing what the organization was trying to accomplish.
The HRC that Joel mentions, that's the Human Rights Campaign, the largest not-for-profit gay rights organization in America. They launched a campaign in 2013 where they encouraged social media users to add a love version of the organization's logo to their profile photos to demonstrate their support for gay and lesbian rights. The signifier in this case, a pink equal sign.
For them, what they focused on was this idea of getting people to identify more with the cause, to become more familiar with it, particularly heterosexuals, people who were not involved in gay rights movement before, to have their first contact with this advocacy movement. And so that then in the future, the hope is that they would be more open to reading those organizational emails or donating to a campaign. It was really seen as a way to kind of do some outreach and get people, to draw people into a broader movement. So that actually, that whole model is the reverse of the idea of slacktivism. And slacktivism sort of says people will do nothing. This is the reverse. They're saying, well, actually, it's going to get people more involved, particularly because they start to identify with it. You know, your profile picture is really interesting because that is your public expression of your identity on a social media platform. So if you say that, you know, gay marriage rights are part of my identity, now you're making a very personal and very kind of embodied, in a way, statement about who you are, and that could really change what you might do in the future in terms of other kinds of political participation.
Facebook never released any exact figures for how many people changed their photo and adopted the meme, but they did disclose that on the day that the HRC's campaign launched, a few million more people than usual changed their profile photo. And if that's not modern-day digital activism, I don't know what is.
What they do is to create an emotional connection and a collective identity, which constitutes fundamental elements of all forms of politics, be they right-wing or left-wing, be they progressive or aggressive, moderate or radical.
You know, it's there is a space in which we can discuss ideas and discuss campaigning and campaign in itself. I mean, it is harder to get stuff done, I think, even when you've got hundreds and thousands of people rallying behind something. But we have seen social change via something starting on social media.
This is how we contact. I mean, this is a lot of how we're getting information and news and understandings of the political world now is through this digital culture. And it can actually have an impact.
Memes. Turns out they're not just hilarious pictures of alpacas and cats anymore. You'll never see them the same way again. That's all from us this week. I'm Lee Alexander, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lee Alexander. And for the record, my favorite meme is probably the one where Oprah releases bees into her audience instead of cars. Anyway, this episode of Chips with Everything was produced and mixed by Matt Shore. He's on Twitter at MattShre. And if you have a weird and interesting technology story, or if you just want to say hey, you can email the team at guardianchips@gmail.com. That's guardianchips@gmail.com. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to the podcast and to all of The Guardian's other great shows on iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. And please don't forget to give the show a quick review and rating on iTunes. We really appreciate it, and it also helps other people find us. Thank you so much for listening. Look forward to seeing you next week.
The Guardian has always been a community of readers, journalists, and contributors. And now our live events are bringing these people together.
The Guardian events are The Guardian at its best, which is a two-way conversation involving the reader and having a real, genuine, thriving debate.
Could be anything from food and culture, arts, to politics, to foreign affairs.
To see what events are coming up and to check out the benefits of membership, go to members.theguardian.com. Also, subscribe to the Guardian Live podcast. You can do so on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other reputable audio platforms.
For more great downloads, go to theguardian.com/audio.